This is Greg Olson, and I'm thrilled to introduce my new podcast, TE1. TE1 will chronicle a 60-year evolution of the tight end position, from its origins as an obscure, overlooked blocking role to the versatile superstar position that it is today. I'll explore the evolution of the position through conversations with some of the all-time game-changing tight ends. And just like the incredible tight ends we sit down with on my new show, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. This truck is all about grit, strength, and dependability. The same attributes it takes to be a tight end.
Hey, all cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm fresh as a daisy, Josh. I'm back from a brief weekend getaway, and you're fresh from a week off a proper vacation.
Yep.
Given that we're less than a week away now from the season restarting, I'm glad that we have both had a little chance to unplug from everything, and we're just going to roll into game week one, and it's really not going to stop until May.
No, it's really not. And I'm ready for it, though. I don't know about you. I'm not doing anything. It's the whole summer went by. I don't know what I did outside of this last week. I drove to Florida for like 2 days in June and then immediately drove all the way back right before an outbreak there. Those are the two highlights, Brandon. That was pretty much it. Yeah. There was some 6 weeks of Premier League matches squeezed in there, if I remember correctly. So game week one kicks off on Saturday. No Friday matches. So what we're going to do on this week's podcast, Brandon, I'm jumping right into it. Okay, there's no preamble here. Let's go. We're going to go match by match, talk about all the fixtures in game week one. It's a mega preview of everything that's going to take place. We're going to take fantasy questions as we go through all of those matches. We are also going to do a last minute lightning round of fantasy FPL advice. And if you're going to be pounding my fist here, Brandon, because I feel very strongly about everything we're going to talk about today.
Pound away.
Yep. And we also have some make fantasy fun again tips. We reached out to some friends in the fantasy community and they reached out to us because this, to me, Brandon, is the real theme. There's a lot going on. A lot of things are not good, Brandon, politically, economically.
Health-related.
You may have forgotten. Yeah, there's a global pandemic. You may have forgotten you haven't been inside a restaurant in 6 months, Brandon. So there's a lot going on. Let's enjoy playing fantasy this year. And you wouldn't think that you would need actual tips, but anyone who takes fantasy seriously knows it can be a miserable and sort of maddening experience sometimes. So we have some advice for how to ensure that you are actually having fun this season. And we're going to pepper those into the pod.
Josh, I've been thinking a lot about Christopher Nolan movies, probably because Tenet is in the ether and it's now being released in theaters. But I always think of the tethering device in Inception. You know, somebody uses this little top that spins, and you spin the top, and that's what tethers you to your reality, so you don't lose sight of the fact that you're actually in some sort of dreamscape. I'm viewing these make fantasy fun again tips as my tether to reality so that when I'm having a really bad game week, as I will have at some point, I can look to these tips
hard as it
my
is to
spinning
believe.
Top. Yep. Yeah, believe it or not, it will happen.
All right. So that's where we are. That's what we're going to talk about in this week's podcast. But Brandon, I just feel like it's time for us to talk about our actual teams here a little bit, our actual squads. I have been thinking a lot. I sort of did, I think, what most people do, which is that you jump on the site. I actually do an autocomplete team because I want to get my ID number, you know, as low as possible. Sure. And then I maybe do one like serious, you know, like reno where I like kind of go through and just like demolish, you know, everything and start fresh. Yeah. And a few players I know I'm going to have and then sort of tinker at the edges. And then about a week out, you know, and the whole time, of course, you know, we're doing team previews and we're talking and we're, you know, I mean, there's all these discussions happening all over the place about what you're going to do with your squad. And, you know, it's like I talked about this a little bit earlier this week. I mentioned this on Twitter, but it's like you have to pick like just the right moment. It's about like 10 days before the season launches because you don't want to wait so long that you don't give your time to, you don't give yourself time to think things through, but you also want to do it early enough that you can really like start tinkering, you know, like that you can really like, you know, like put it down and give yourself like a week to sort of let it like sit there. If you do it too early, then sometimes you find yourself locked into like a certain players. I actually been thinking about this with Timo Werner. I'm just like, he's been like a lock since like I set my team, but I mean, is he like just an unmovable lock? Is there, you know, will nothing budge him from my team? So maybe we can talk about that a little bit later as well. But let's start with you though. Where are you with your squad? How confident do you feel? Maybe you can actually walk us through your team, you know, from keeper all the way up to the forward line.
Yeah, I would say I'm on probably my fifth iteration of the squad like you. I just went in and did the autocomplete, and then I came back to my team maybe 2 weeks later. And then, like mapped out, what do I really want this team to look like? Who are my immovable players? And I think the third and fourth tinkers were just trying to then iron out what is the less the players that I want, more what is the shape of the team that I want. And that's probably based on like those immovable assets. Like if I'm going to definitely have Salah, Trent and Werner, that will dictate what the shape of my team is going to be in the end. And my current tinker is I'm now actually starting to weed out players that are problems that are messing with that structure, or maybe that right. looks like they aren't going to work because of certain form or fixtures. So yeah, let's run through the players. Least inspiring portion of my team is the goalkeeper. So I have a non-rotation here. I've got Aston Villa's Nyland on the bench and then Matt Ryan. And I've committed to the 4.5 GK set and forget, and the decision I think for most of people who are planning to do the same as whether you go for McCarthy or Ryan. And for me, it's just a stats based pick. Ryan, I think you can make a very compelling case that Southampton will be a better team than Brighton this season. But just from a shrewd FPL stats point of view, Matt Ryan is the better asset. So let's see how that works for me. I think he is a terrific shot stopper. And Brighton, you know, when their game plan is set right and they're organized and everyone's feeling it, I think that they can be a great, I won't overstate it, they can be a pretty good defensive team.
Yeah.
So
interesting. I've gone McCarthy. So it's like it sets up an interesting dynamic there already.
Bit of a battle. Mm-hmm. Okay, my back line is another Brighton defender, Lamptey, a winger that lots of Brighton fans are excited about, Tariq Lamptey. He's at 4.5. Looks like he could lock down that fullback position for Brighton at the start of the season. Then my cheap 4.0 guy is Barry Douglas for Leeds. And, you know, Leeds papers and scouts are pretty sure that Douglas has the left back spot lockdown for the moment. I mean, you would think Bielsa might want to bring in some more higher caliber talent, maybe with what's left in the transfer market. But for now, it looks like Douglas is among the better 4.0 defensive FPL assets. Trent, right in the heart of that defense at 7.5. He feels like a lock for all of our teams. Sure. Kyle Walker-Peters is my Southampton defensive coverage, but Walker-Peters is, you know, for a fullback on a team that's probably going to be fighting for top half status, then I think that's a very solid deal. And Walker-Peters, I don't think that he's going to light up the FPL charts by any stretch, but I think that price gives you that flexibility. 4.5 gives you that flexibility to say, well, maybe he's only going to come through with three assists this season and 12 clean sheets. I think that's still a steal at 4.5.
Yeah, I've thought about him a lot myself.
So my fifth defender, I really wanted this to be Virgil van Dijk, but going back to me talking about the shape of my team, it wasn't working. Somebody had to go. So van Dijk has made way to save 1.5, and Ben Davis has come in for Spurs. So I guess the hope here is that the real Jose Mourinho team shows up and clean sheets are a regular occurrence for Spurs. Mm-hmm. A decent fixture run to start, home Everton, Southampton, Newcastle before they hit United in game week 4. So 5.0 just looks like it could be, I just don't have space for another premium defender. That's as high as I can go.
I mean, he arguably is. You know, I'll admit I have him on my team as well. I was shocked to find that he had zero. And I know he hasn't played a ton of minutes, but zero goals and zero assists in both of the last two seasons. How odd is that? I actually think of him as a pretty attacking player. Now, he had two goals and seven assists in the 17-18 season. I can't remember if that was when he was still with Swansea or not. But yeah, just I was a little surprised by that. 0-0 the last 2 years.
So I don't think there are a ton of surprises there in my goalkeeper and defensive selection. Things get a little nutty here in my midfield, Josh.
Okay. All right. Uh-huh. I like it. I like a little nutty.
Yeah. Salah, there are lots of debate between Mane and Salah. Mane has definitely looked better in the preseason, but Salah's just the FPL comfort blanket. There he is. And Aubameyang has been one of those players that his first two fixtures with Fulham followed by West Ham are just too appealing and perhaps captainable. And I can't quit him at this point. He's really meant. And it works really well for me to have Aubameyang in because of the Manchester City and Manchester United blanks, which I'm sure we'll talk a bit more about later in the podcast. But
sure.
Aubameyang will, I mean, if he really does light it up in game weeks 1 and 2, it could be hard to get rid of, but we are going to need a placeholder for City and United midfield assets. And I think he's a good placeholder for that.
I think one thing that comes out of our team previews was just realizing just what a kind of ultimate flat track bully Aubameyang is, you know, that he is just puts up gigantic returns against teams with bad defenses or just teams that are bad in general. And they open the season playing Fulham, who are going to be okay or below okay at best. And then West Ham, who have all kinds of defensive issues right now. Yeah. And so it's like if we're going to say that and then talk ourselves out of Aubameyang, it feels like we'd only be doing that because he's become such a popular pick. It doesn't seem like, and like you said, it's such an easy path because their fixtures aren't very good after those first two matches, right? So I think it is pretty easy to, it might be hard to say goodbye, but because they play Liverpool away and Man City away in two of the next three, it sort of makes it easier, I think, to let go, even if he does well.
So here's where it gets weird in my midfield. I've got another Arsenal asset in Saka, who, you know, I'm really scared of him because he's a great player. He had a great breakout season for Arsenal last season, and he looked great in the Community Shield. He's been playing enough in the preseason. But with Pepe and Willian, who play on the right, where Saka has been playing for Arsenal, there's going to be a ton of competition for Saka to come up against, and he's less experienced, and you'd think that Arsenal are invested enough in Willian and Pepe to give them a number of minutes. So I'm very concerned about him as a consistent starter. But so I need to work on this price point in my midfield. I think Stuart Armstrong is the more settled 5.5 pick. His minutes are probably more of a lock, and you have a better sense of what you're going to get from Southampton going forward than you do from Arsenal. So Saka is kind of on the bubble in this current tinker. The other wild one, and I blame YouTube for this, it's Zaha. You know how much I love to dunk on Will Zaha, Josh, but he has looked insanely good in the preseason highlights. Wow.
Mm-hmm. The fact that he sucks doesn't bother you at all?
I mean, it does bother me. I think getting rid of Virgil van Dijk allowed me to bump. I can't even remember who I had in Zaha's place here at a cheaper price point. But I think what I ultimately want to have happen is that Zaha gets bumped up to a Chelsea mid before game week one starts. Whether it's Ziyech or Pulisic or Havertz now, who we have at a really interesting price point at 8.5. So Zaha, it's kind of like as high as I can go with my current setup. So there could be a little more tinkering to turn him into a Chelsea asset, which could be just a little more fun, to be honest with you.
Well, I think it's interesting. I agree that he has looked awesome in preseason, and so it has turned my head a little bit. Maybe it's because, you know, I mean, honestly, one argument for him would be that, you know, he might get sold in October, right? And so he wants to like kind of put himself in the shop window, like the puppy dog, you know, doing a flip or whatever in the, you know, pet store, you know, like by me, you know, I don't know. So I, you know, I could say, okay, so anyway, let's keep going, Brendan. I, you know, it's unique and, you know, I wouldn't do it, but you know, I,
yeah. So you're daring me. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah.
Again, my fifth mid is my cheapo bench fodder, and that's Mario Lemina for Fulham.
Ah, yeah. And new signing.
My God, if you look at the 4.5 midfield options, it's so grim. And it's not even guaranteed that Lemina starts. It looks like Anguissa is back in the fold with Fulham after being on loan. So you've got three 4.5 options for Fulham there, Harrison Reed and Lemina and Anguissa. Harrison Reed is the one that's more likely to start more matches, but he's more of a defensive midfielder. Lemina and Anguissa are box to box. They could conceivably be involved in the attack and feeding Mitro.
Yeah.
So this is kind of I think the 4.5 midfielder position, I'm at the point where I'm willing to concede. I don't know who the best one is going to be, and we'll only know once the season starts. So whether it's Lemina or some other junky asset at 4.5, it doesn't matter, because I think we're all going to have to gravitate to the emerging assets when the season starts anyway.
Yeah, I've got a cheapy 4.5 too, so I'll get to that in a second. So, all right, so continue, please.
Yeah, my three strikers here, Timo Werner, I'm so drawn in by, I mean, who isn't drawn in by the transfer action at Chelsea? There's so many sexy attacking assets there. And Werner at 9.5, another great budget get if he comes good. And I think he's actually captainable in game week one. If you want to talk about the problems with captaining Aubameyang in the early kickoff to start the game week, something that we kind of shy away from doing because it's not all that much fun. There's a little more fun in anticipating what your captain's going to do. So I just love Werner going into the season. He's going to make that number nine position all his own. Mitrovic at 6.0, and lots of haters out there for Fulham. And, you know, fair enough. They were miserable in the 2018-19 season. And, you know, Mitrovic tried as hard as he could to keep FPL managers happy and keep Fulham up, but he just wasn't able to do it. But the fact remains that he is the focal point of that attack. And I just don't see any more logical pick at 6.0. And I think 6.0 is as cheap. I could see a 6.0 forward like Mitrovic working as your second striker, and you bring in a bench forward to play 3-5-2 or 4-4-2. But I am addicted to the 3-4-3, and my third striker is Martial. And I really badgered you about Martial when we were doing our Manchester United preview, because you were really all in on him, and I was curious about. But what about Rashford?
He said he was the fourth player you'd want of their big four.
I don't remember saying that exactly, but I do think when I'm just looking at the striker selection, and I'm kind of cutting out anybody higher than 9.5, so I'm cutting out Aguero and Kane at the moment, and Manchester United having that fixture run that they do, and they're back in action in game week two. I was making the case earlier in our preseason content of, you could just slowly bring United and City assets into your squad. Why hinder your team by having benched premium assets in game week one? But I guess I'm coming around to this idea that you're probably going to want to have two or three or four of these City and United guys for game weeks two and three. So why not start with one on the bench? Martial, it is. So that's where I'm at with my 15 starters.
Okay. Yeah. I like it. Some things I wasn't expecting. So it's a nice mix. Now, obviously, like, you know, all caveats or whatever, you are allowed to change your team completely from this team reveal. And, it's not locked in. So,
okay.
I feel like, because I feel like sometimes at these team reveal pods, I end up like, I feel like I don't want to be in a position where I back myself into a corner a little bit and defending a player. And then I drop them the night before. And then, you know, someone's like, hey, like I thought that player was locked for your team. So So I'll go through my squad. I've got a 4-3-3 to start off the season. I'm going McCarthy over Matt Ryan. And honestly, I mean, you kind of hinted at it in the when you talked about Ryan. It, you know, it's just that I just think the defense for Southampton is better. I just have more. I just kind of expect them to keep more clean sheets. And I don't know that he'll get as many saves as Ryan, but I think that the clean sheets will weigh out. I also just like their fixtures. I feel like I can get through like the first 8 or 9 game weeks without really worrying too much about, and really through game week, I don't know, like 12, I would say. So that gets you almost to December. Probably would end up playing a wild card around that time anyway. One thing to note is that even though you can use the wild card, I think it's game week 20 is typically when the cutoff is, or I guess after game week 19. This season it will be different because the second half of, like, I think you have to use your wild card by like game week 16 or something like that. It's like it's within the calendar year you have to use the wild card. Yeah, I think it's game week 16 is like the last time you can use your wild card, and you have to have it before game week 17. So it is something to keep in mind when you're thinking about setting your team. You're not gonna be able to keep it for 20 weeks. It's gonna be a slightly shorter window. I'm not quite sure why they did that. You know, I guess it's just cleaner maybe to have a 2020 wild card and a 2021 wild card. But that is something to keep in mind when you think about, you know, if you want to think that far ahead. I mean, obviously when it comes to forwards and everything else, you don't necessarily want to do that. But when it comes to keepers, sometimes you do want to be a little more conscious of like, you know, like 4 months from now or whatever. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, I think Ryan is reasonable. I mean, partially this is just like a little bit, you know, is it experience or is it bias? I don't know. But just not having a lot of great luck with Ryan over the years of my team and just feeling like he's like a bad luck player for me. So I am.
Sounds like bias, Josh.
Yeah. But is it born from experience? Is that, you know what I mean? It's like, when is it experience? What is it bias?
So,
and then my defenders are some similarities there. Of course, I have Trent like everybody else. I mean, you know, there's a little bit of injury concern with him. I do understand that, but not enough to put me off him. And, you know, I guess if he doesn't, he came off the bench for England in their first international. If he didn't start the next one, maybe I'd start to get a little bit worried. But I just think, I don't know. Saturday Premier League. If he got called up and he's playing in these matches for England, he's going to be ready for the start of the season is how I feel about things. So, so I expect him to start. I have Ben Davis, kind of like you. I read this article on this interview with Eric Dyer in The Athletic, and he seems like such a nice, normal, cool guy. He's a guy I never really thought about one way or the other. And then I read this interview and I was like, this guy seems awesome. Like, he seems so cool. Like this is like the guy that I most want to, he's the new Juan Mata for me. Like, I'm in love with Eric Dyer. He seems so nice.
Can you imagine Juan Mata climbing into the stands to throw punches at fans though? That was
Brandon, I would do that myself. So that to me is, I'm fine with that. It's a fit for my personality. Okay. Yeah. I've got a little Cantona in me. Trent and I've got Ben Davis. I might have said Davis. It is Davis though, right? So I've got Ben Davis and Trent. And then I've got Ruben Vinagre. And there's a little bit of talk. Wolves made a signing, like a little $2 million signing over the weekend. And there was a little bit of worry because the signing they made was a left back. I'm just forgetting his name right now. But you know, Ruben Vinagre is a really highly rated player for Wolves, a player who I think is going to keep his position even after this signing takes place. I mean, you know, if you just want to go by transfer market value alone, I mean, Vinagre's sell-on value is almost 5 times the player that they brought in. It's around 10 million. You know, he's been a young sort of like understudy for Johnny for a couple of years now. So
yeah.
I think it's really his spot to lose. And at 4.5 million, I mean, I'm actually considering a double up. I may switch Davis over to, Sace or Boley.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Just like, I just have a lot of, I mean, okay. Yeah. They do play Man City in game week 2, but outside of that fixture, I just think there's a ton of, it's just a great run for Wolves. And, you know, one thing that I'm really thinking about a lot is setting up my team so that I don't have to waste transfers on anybody who's under like 7 million. You know, I just want all of my cheaper players to be players that I can just, that I just have to think about, you know, like maybe they're not, I think last year I may have spent a little too much time, you know, picking apart my little 4.5 million players, and it's kind of a waste of a transfer. And so I am going to try to, you know, embrace. I know it's kind of the trendy thing to do, but I think it's trendy because I think it's exciting, and I think it's something that people are really into, which is this idea of upside chasing and being really aggressive with your most expensive players and trying to find major, you know, 10 point plus, you know, hauls throughout the season. And it's a real, like, you got to be on your toes kind of perspective, you know. It's like, it's not a set and forget approach, but I just think I feel like I spent too much time last season tinkering at the margins, and I want to base my transfers around bringing in those players who are going to have huge hauls and not transferring a player who might get me 5 points for a player who might get me 7, you know. It's just not, I think, a good use of a transfer. So I've got Ruben, and then I've got, I'm a little, my other 4.5 million defender, I'm a little on the fence about. Right now I've got Luke Thomas, who I think is pretty likely to start the season. He's 4.5 million. I don't love him long term, but they play West Brom and Burnley. And the other alternative would just be to bring in Charlie Taylor and just stash him on the bench for game week one. So that's something I'm considering too. And then my the fifth defender that I have on the bench is Tyreek Mitchell, who is replacing Patrick Van Aanholt for a while. So we'll see. And it's kind of funny because I was just talking about not having to deal with defensive transfers. But if I have Thomas and I have Tyreek Mitchell, am I in a position where I'm going to have to burn a transfer just to bring out one of these guys in the future? So maybe I've talked myself into having Charlie Taylor and just hoping that Tyreek Mitchell can do a job in week one. They play Southampton at home. You know, it's possible they keep a clean sheet there. So that's my key. And then I've got Nyland as well. So that's my keepers and defenders. And then the middle, like you, I've got Salah. I honestly just don't put a lot of stock in preseason. And I'm just going to put more stock in the 3 years of incredibly strong, consistent returns that he's delivered in the fantasy game. And I'm planning to captain him at home to a promoted side in game week one. I feel like a lot of people are overthinking this a little bit. And so I've got Salah, and then I have Aubameyang as well. I think Aubameyang is a fine captain as well. Just a little more of a wild card for all the reasons you talked about when it came to Saka, right? It's like, how are they even going to line up? Yeah. You know, it's like, it's all these kind of unanswered questions. And Salah is a guy who is incredibly aggressive when it comes to scoring goals. And last season in game week one, they played a promoted side at home in Norwich, and they clobbered them, and saw like a double digit return, and I captained him. And so I'm like, why mess with what seems like a very smart and simple strategy, which is just to captain Salah at home in game week one to a promoted team. So I've got Aubameyang, Salah, and then my 5.5 million third midfielder is Saint-Maximin. I actually had Saka this morning. I moved to Saint-Maximin. I have considered Daniel Podence. I think Stuart Armstrong is a consideration. I just think there are a lot of different options in that spot. And and maybe this is just an example of a spot where you just say, you know what, I just want a player that I like. And I just like Saint-Maximin. And I also think that if they sign Callum Wilson, then I think that which looks like it's gonna happen this week, may have even happened by the time this podcast goes out. We'll see. It looks like it's at the, you know, whatever, it's at the goal line, right? It's like, it's almost there.
And the intriguing thing of them maybe even signing Ryan Fraser, another ex-Bournemouth boy. And it was something I was asking Newcastle to do during our Newcastle preview, is exploit the fact that they could be one of the fastest teams in the Premier League with Saint-Maximin, with Almiron. Right. If you bring in Fraser, it would look really exciting going forward. And Callum Wilson being much more capable than Joel Ellington. So, I like that.
Much more capable. And their fixtures are incredible. It's like the complete opposite of the way it's typically been for Newcastle. I think the last few seasons they've had these really rough starts. And they don't really have a truly bad run of fixtures until Boxing Day. Before then, it is just a sea of very strong fixtures. I mean, even their tougher matches are at home. They play Man United at home at game week 5. There could be fans in the stands by then. They play away to Spurs in game week 3. That's not a great fixture, but it's certainly not terrible. And I mean, the run is so good that I actually am like, maybe I'm even talking myself into a Newcastle defender. So how's that for crazy? But I haven't done that yet. And then on my bench, I have Mason Greenwood, who, it feels like he's become this very unpopular, untrendy pick. I guess I'm just, it's more of a heart pick than a stats pick. I don't know. But I just see this run of excellent fixtures to start the season for Man United beginning game week two. And I see a starting wing who has a forwards tendencies who is available as a midfielder for 7.5 million. And he is, unless Jadon Sancho signs with them, which really looks unlikely at this point, that is Greenwood's spot, that spot on the right there. And I mean, certainly not going to lose to Daniel James, right? And so at 7.5 million to get a starting Man United player who, you know, had double digit goals last season, I just think it's very appealing. And so the Greenwood I'm going to stash for game week one. Maybe that's a head over or a heart overhead pick. I don't know. I don't think it is, though, honestly. I'm just trusting my instincts on that one. And then my 4.5, I've got Bissouma, kind of like you. I don't really like any of the picks. Bissouma seems like a pretty sure starter, though, for Brighton. I know you're all in on Brighton this year. So
I love Brighton.
So I've got Bissouma. And then up front, still really undecided in that 6 million slot. I have Che Adams. Your game week one
blunder
from last season. End of the season very strong, has done well in the preseason as well, though weirdly Southampton haven't played a ton of preseason matches. I think they've only played two, and I think one of them was like mostly youth team players. And then I love this idea he ended
the season very strong by scoring a couple of goals. Congratulations, Che Adams.
I thought he looked good too. I felt like he finally got his confidence back. Because he was good in the chat. I mean, there's a reason you brought him in last year, right?
Yeah,
right?
Yes, it's good. True.
Yeah,
that's true.
So, but it may be Mitro. I don't feel locked in. I actually feel like this is one where I may actually have to go look at some stats, Brandon. I don't want to do
oh my
it.
God.
Uh-huh. It's going to have to happen, I think, for me to really feel confident in that one. And then I think I mentioned Timo Werner. I've got him too. I wonder if there's a way to maybe turn Werner into Jamie Vardy or Harry Kane, and maybe the Werner train is like a little. It's gotten a little off the tracks. The only issue there is his ownership is insane. Like, when did this guy become almost 50% owned player in the game? Like, if this guy gets an assist, it's going to be like a million rank drop. Like, I don't know, you know, and I don't know. So he's also, I think, honestly, quite affordable given his a nice run of fixtures for Chelsea. I mean, you kind of talked about this already with Werner, so I won't go into it. And then Jimenez, I there's a lot of different options, I think, in that. And that 8.5 million range. And I just went with the one who I trust, who's incredibly consistent. I've also left 0.5 million in the bank. And I think there's a really strong chance that I turn Jimenez into Anthony Martial for game week two. And so I would go into game week two with two Man United players. Mm-hmm. And then in game week three, I would move Aubameyang to KDB. And then game week four, I'm a little like that one's like, I actually don't really like planning too many transfers in advance. I think two seems like enough. So that's where I am. Brandon, I feel like we have gone on for a long time in this intro. So why don't we take a quick break and then we'll jump into some fixture talk.
Great.
All right, Brandon, we went so long there that we didn't get a chance to do Patreon thank yous. And if you would like to become an Always Cheating Patreon supporter, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. I am conscious, Brandon, of us not pummeling our listeners with too much Patreon talk. Okay, so just... thank you. If you want to support the pod, if you want to get an extra podcast a week, if you want to get the new Week in Review newsletter, courtesy of Mini League Mate, join the Always Cheating Cup, lots of other stuff, get free t-shirts, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating to do that. Brandon, can you thank our new Patreon supporters?
Yeah, thank you to our new supporters at the Volkswagen tier, Harry Wool and Don Norman. Lord Sorloth patrons, James Conroy, Chris Bush, Scrambled Eggs. I hope you're a Frasier fan, Scrambled Eggs. Laz Horner, Joshua. Eamon Hogan, FC Bosta, Andrew Morton, Joel, Adam Morrow, Andrew Worrell, Peter Stallbrand, Matthew Church, Nate Whittem, Jack, Edvin Carlson, and John O'Gorman. And at the Pookie patron level, thank you to Christopher Murphy, Alan Wynn Jones, Luke Cummings, Matt Fielding, Scott Long, Sebastian Frost, Jonathan Hewitt, Edwin Habisher John, and Soju Hu. I hope I did justice to all your names there. And a quick word for our friends at Fantasy Football Hub. Visit them at fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always, where you can get a 25% discount on your new membership. What is the hub? Well, It is a place where you can get all of your FPL needs covered. You can read, listen to, and watch videos of the greatest fantasy minds managing today, sharing their teams and strategies through thoughtful articles and videos. Access all the data. That includes real Opta stats and easy-to-use player comparison tools. And Josh, I think it's time that we meet the contributors of Fantasy Football Hub. We reached out to these contributors, and they sent us, just so we can get to know them a little bit,
so a few of them responded.
Okay, just a few of them, but they gave us each a little tip on how you can make fantasy fun again, which of course is the theme for Always Cheating this season. Josh, introduce us to the first Hub contributor.
Yeah, and so like you said, Brandon, I really do want to hammer this point on, possibly too much, Brandon, but it really can't be said enough, because it's a long season, and if you are going to take everything way too seriously, you can really burn out on fantasy like 3 weeks in and just stop playing. So I think it's important to keep this advice in mind. Harry, aka FPL Tips, says mini leagues. Playing with friends, competing with friends is much more entertaining than competing for overall rank. Yes, I agree with that, Harry. Have a group chat for FPL and weekly or monthly forfeits, like the lowest score buying the highest score a drink. I like that. Or maybe just a little, you know, if you can't meet in person, maybe a little Venmo action. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, it's like my little Lakers bet in our weekly poker game instead of virtual Venmo. It's much better that way and less stressful. Tom, our longtime friend Tom from Who Got the Assist, says, focus on no-nonsense captains. Who cares if everyone else is getting 30 points as well? It feels good either way. I really think that's true. I don't think when you captain Mo Salah, even if he's hugely owned and he gets a goal, assist, and 3 bonus points, that feels extremely satisfying.
Sure does.
And yeah, maybe just not worry about ownership in general. I think that's a good piece of advice. FPL Rooser says, or I think it's Royser, says, focus on high impact transfers. I actually talked about this when I was talking about my own team. I said, so it'll lead to less decision fatigue and make playing fantasy a lot more enjoyable. That's definitely something I'm working on this year. And then finally, I wouldn't say real life, because I never met him in real life, but our Michigan friend, longtime friend, Eric Freeman says, never go hashtag full maverick, but go for a fun wild punt every once in a while. If it works, you get to brag for a month. It's all good advice.
Okay, so as listeners of the Always Cheating podcast, you can get 25% off of any membership tier at the Fantasy Football Hub. Just visit fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always. Thanks, Hub.
All right, and the Always Cheating podcast will move on right now to Game Week 1, Brandon, no break. Game Week 1 kicks off on Saturday, a little spread out. They really took that 30-day rule much more seriously than I was expecting them to, to the point where there are 2 matches on Monday taking place at the same time. So you have on Saturday, you got 4 fixtures, then 2 on Sunday, 2 on Monday. So let's jump right into the Saturday fixtures. Kicks things off with Fulham Arsenal, and I have to say, it's not the match I would have expected to be the kickoff, but it's kind of an awesome way to, like, there's no way there are not goals in this match, right?
One would think. I mean, it's a London derby, which is fun. And the original London club in Fulham hosting new boys, Arsenal. But the cottage always looks great on broadcast. You know, when they do have 4 stands, it looks even better.
Right.
But it should be a fun match. When we saw this matchup in October of 2018, there was a goal for Fulham by Andre Schürrle, and then there were many goals by Arsenal, including Aaron Ramsey, and coming off the bench, Aubameyang. I can't remember exactly what his output was, but it was goals and assists. And like we are saying, Aubameyang, flat track bully. The one thing that's left to be undecided about Fulham v Arsenal, Josh, it's not the lineups. It's actually Fulham's kit. They're the one club in the Premier League who has yet to unveil their new home kit for the season. So I don't know. They could just be playing in simple V-neck T-shirts for all I know.
All right. So just one question. There's a couple of questions from listeners, but just one for you as a Fulham supporter. I mean, there is a part of me that really strongly wants to have Salah and Mane for Game Week 1 and just kick things off with those two as my two premium midfielders. Is there any chance that Fulham's defense is good enough to stop Abba from hauling in this match? Like, is there any reason to think that this could be a tight 1-1 or, you know, 1-0 Arsenal win? Do you want, you know, something like where you wouldn't necessarily get massive returns from Aubameyang? You know, what do you think? Are they any better defensively?
I mean, I suspect they're going to be slightly better than they were in 2018. I mean, Rodak is in pretty good form as a keeper, and Fulham in 2018, they couldn't figure out who their keeper was, and they just had a series of unfortunate keepers. So at least Rodak is solid, and Hector in the center of defense is a much more solid central defender. So there is hope, but that said, they're just not set up to defend against a team like Arsenal. Arsenal score at least two goals in this match. I would guarantee it.
Wow, a Brandon Kelly guarantee. Everyone is going to get $5 Venmo'd to them if it doesn't, like, pan out.
Free tacos if somebody hits the big taco in the outfield. Yeah, yep.
Right. All right, a couple questions. FPL Canada says everyone has, and I'm inclined to agree, and that's why I can't drop Aubameyang, because it just seems so likely. And his game week two obviously is really good as well. FPL Canada says everyone has Aubameyang and also captained him game week one. I don't know if I'd say most. It says, what will his ownership be in game week three? Could he be a 12 million differential? What do you think?
Yeah, that's going to be the toughest decision for us to make come game week three. So, like we said, Aubameyang starts with Fulham, then has West Ham. Great fixtures. You're almost definitely not dropping Aubameyang ahead of West Ham unless something unfortunate happens in game week one. So if he hauls in two matches, you've all planned on, you know, dropping Aubameyang to bring in De Bruyne or Sterling or Bruno Fernandes. Will you have the guts to drop him? And yeah, as Canada is suggesting here, does Aubameyang at that point become a differential? I don't know if that will be the case, because if he looks good, I don't think as many people are going to be inclined to drop him.
Right.
So imagine this scenario. So we both went through our game week one teams, and we both have Salah and Aubameyang. So you're almost thinking going into the season, it would be horrible if both Aubameyang and Salah did really well, because then I won't know which one of them to drop for these other assets that I want, which is hilarious to me, because isn't that all we want in the world, is for our two most expensive players to just be hauling week after week? I would love to be in a situation come game week three where my team isn't broken, I don't have to fix anything, and I can just hang on to a player like Aubameyang. So I just think there's so much upside here with him.
I think strategically there is a trap that people get into sometimes where they think, you know, in differential, right? Anybody who isn't familiar with that term, basically, it's just it means that their ownership is relative. You know, is I don't even, what would we call it, like under 15%? I mean, it's not going to be under that after two game weeks, but you know, it's relatively low, at least compared to where everybody is moving. Everybody's moving away from that player, and you're going to hold on to them. And I think in general, it's a mistake to hold on to an expensive player when everyone is moving off, because you think they're going to turn into a differential. I feel like that is rarely. Usually people are moving off for a reason, you know, and I just think that away to Liverpool, away to Man City in game weeks 3 and 5 makes it easier. I mean, I know I mentioned this earlier on in the pod, but that's my thinking. I don't know. We'll see. But like you said, I mean, if he scores 5 goals in the first two matches, you know, it's not going to be easy to drop him, obviously.
Well, so, I guess then that's the situation where we were talking about not being passive in our 10 tips for FPL success last week is, it's a bold move, and it probably could be the right strategy to see Aubameyang is doing really well going into game week three, and then you still drop him.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, that would be the upside chasing approach, right? As to, Suren Szczytowski says, Mitch are coming back to the Premier League to haunt us once again. His ownership is going through the roof, but I'm still not convinced. So we talked about Mitch a little bit already. I mean, he was pretty good. I'm still surprised. I mean, to me, Mitro, the appeal is kind of as a value pick, right? Because I thought he was going to come in at 6.5 or 7. And so to come in at 6 million, it just feels like you're getting decent value there.
Yeah. I mean, you can argue about the quality of Mitro or the quality of Fulham, but the argument you're having FPL wise is the price tag. And Mitro at 6.0 is just an entirely different conversation. And also, like, what is it going to take you to be convinced of Mitrovic? Like, how am I going to convince you? He had the most shots in the Premier League in the 2018-19 season. I mean, it didn't come to much, but he is an active striker, and that's what you want from an FPL asset, somebody who is taking shots in the box. Yeah. And you'll be convinced when you see, either you will or you won't be convinced when you see him play. So if you don't want to deal with him in game week one, then just don't deal with him. And you'll be able to see with your eyes once we actually see Fulham play.
I thought he had a nice assist to Joe Bryan in that championship final too. Like it made it seem like maybe he's like a little more complete than he was a couple of years ago. Like he certainly has taken a step backwards, right? So most shots 2 years ago led the league in love the championship and goals, right? They won the Golden Boot last season in the championship. Yep. So yeah, I mean, I honestly think I'm probably going to end up going with Mitro over Adams. It also just seems like it's more fun. I don't know. having Mitro seems like a blast. Whereas having Che Adams, I'm like, what the hell am I doing? Kind of from the start. Let's move on to the 3 p.m.s. Those are the 10 a.m.s U.S. time. We have Palace, Southampton. It's kind of a weird, like, they kind of suck the two worst matches of the weekend in this window here. I guess the West Brom, Leicester. So you have Palace, Southampton, and then actually, I guess West Ham, Newcastle. I'm talking myself into this one. West Ham, Newcastle could be fun. Palace, Southampton. That's like a match for a fantasy manager more than a pure watch, Brandon. Yeah. We don't even have to go into this one too long. We don't have any questions about it. The one thing I want to ask you about is Danny Ings. We haven't talked about him a lot. I mean, he really was quite good last season. And, you could argue that he overperformed his XG a little bit, but I think his XG was still like, was like 16 or 17, it wasn't
high.
Still pretty high. And so, he had an excellent season. By all accounts, Southampton are a team that looked to have gelled, right? And I don't think anyone thinks they're Champions League contenders, but like eighth place, like, sure, that's a possibility. And so have you considered Ings at all for your team?
I think he's too expensive. Going back to what we were saying about Mitrovic, like the FPL lens that you look through, it makes it really difficult to say, well, yes, Ings is the better striker than Mitrovic. But when you take the prices into account, suddenly Mitrovic is the better striker. And I just think that is the case when there is a 2.5 million price difference between the two. And I still think Palace has a few defensive injuries, but if Roy Hodgson has proved anything at Palace, it's that he can set up that defense. And they are generally pretty tight, assuming Sacco isn't playing. So I think this isn't going to be an interesting match because I suspect Palace and Southampton want to be fighting over the same position in the Premier League table this season. So if I had to guess, I'd say it's going to be a pretty tight affair.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel too, although I do think that Southampton's scoring this match. I'm sort of interested in Southampton in general. I mean, when you look at Adams and Ward-Prowse, Armstrong, even Smallbone at 4.5 million, I think there's, possibly interesting. There's a lot of, but it's like, I'm like reluctant to invest outside of their defense, which is super cheap, without seen a little bit more. Maybe that's just on me. Like I have to go watch some, like, I don't even know, like clips of Stuart Armstrong or look at his numbers from last season a little more closely. He's someone that could maybe end up being my 5.5 million midfielder, but I wouldn't be basing it on anything but like people on Twitter or whatever, and that's just not a good, buying a player because someone on Twitter said it and you don't actually do any research yourself is just in general a bad strategy. All right, so let's move on to West Ham, Newcastle. We've got one question here. And I talked about this a little bit already. So I'll get your thoughts though. Josh Wilson says, thoughts on St. Max now that Wilson is likely signed at Newcastle. Does it make him a more tempting pick?
I don't know. Does it make Callum Wilson a more tempting pick as opposed to St. Maximin? So you don't want to find yourself in a position where you're taking the cheaper asset on a team just because they're the cheaper asset when it's going to be Callum Wilson, who's probably going to be scoring most of the points. I suspect Wilson is going to be on penalties once he makes it to Newcastle. So I just suddenly I find Wilson to be this appealing player. I mean, imagine if Callum Wilson comes in around 7 million. I think that would be rather tempting.
That's interesting. If Wilson came in at 7 million, that actually is like legit interesting. Like any more than that, and it just feels like too much money for a Newcastle player.
Agreed.
Part of the appeal for St. Maximin is that you're only spending 5.5 million, right? It's like it just, you know, even if it doesn't work out, it's it does not upend your team structure to have somebody like him in it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he may not be the right pick, but it's not going to cost you the way it is if you get the, you know, Salah versus Mane,
yep,
you know, issue wrong. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I just enjoy watching him play. I think he's super talented. He scored 3 goals and 5 assists last season and 5 assists, and he did it without a real forward, right? I mean, like, Joe Linton is terrible. Gale was okay, I guess, near the end. Andy Carroll can't stay healthy. Muda, they're looking to move on already, even though he scored that one goal in the Man United match. He's only scored one goal in 2 seasons.
And Gale's out for the start of the season, too, so yeah, that's Gale's competition that's done.
Yeah. So, I mean, if Wilson signs, he's going to slot right in right away. We already talked about the Newcastle fixture. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we'll do our bonus pod this week. Maybe, you know, I'll end up doing that one together. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about Wilson on there. So let's move on to the Liverpool Leeds match. And a question here that I feel like is what's the word? Burbling? That's not a word. I don't know. Like bubbling under the surface. A lot of people are like, maybe I can go without Liverpool. Maybe I cannot have Liverpool. And I just picked one. I had several questions about this. I just picked one. Tia Baca says, I'm considering going without any Liverpool. Premiums like Bruno, Sterling, Abba, and Son interest me much more, to be honest. But it's like common knowledge to double or triple up on pool. Am I crazy to go without any Liverpool players?
No, you're not crazy, Teo, but I wouldn't do it. And I tried this same thing last season, and it was I'm the poster boy for this strategy. And it was one of the things that torpedoed my rank for the season. And I put all my chips into the Manchester City pool and took them all my resources out of, I'm mixing my metaphors here, took them all out of Liverpool. And it's worth reminding yourself that it's better for you to have players from the absolute best teams in the league. You don't want to end up with a fantasy team where suddenly all your players are from the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th best team in the league. Liverpool are going to. So the logic I sort of landed on when I made this mistake last season was, well, Liverpool end up winning their games 1-0, 2-0, 2-1, 3-1, whereas City win their games 5-1, 6-1. So why not just forego Liverpool to go to City? Well, the fact is Liverpool are still winning all those games. They're still scoring goals in all those games. These assets might feel expensive, but they're returning for you and they're well worth it. And as you were saying, Josh, about Salah, we've got 3 seasons worth of FPL output to show us how well worth it they are.
Yeah, Salah's got 73 goals and 34 assists over the last, and God knows how many bonus points over the last 3 seasons. You're going to talk yourself out of Salah because he didn't look great in preseason or, you know, at the end of the summer when everything was weird and Liverpool had clinched, had nothing to play for, and he didn't even play a couple of those matches. I don't know. And he was also like desperate to win the Golden Boot, which I don't think was like served him well. I don't feel like he played within himself the way that he should have. So I'm dismissing the summer and the preseason. I'm going to go with the 3-year track record and assume that is the real Mo Salah.
So the general response here of this actual fixture, Liverpool v Leeds, is, well, you don't really get the fact that Bielsa is a phenomenal world-class manager and Leeds are going to be a stronger team than a lot of us realize. How much stock are you putting into that just looking at game week one and the competition that Leeds is going to put up against Liverpool?
Jurgen Klopp eats phenomenal managers for breakfast. Okay. He's like, all he does is like make Champions League finals and like beat Pep Guardiola. And like, I don't know. It's like, that doesn't bother me at all. Like Liverpool are playing their first match of the new season after winning the Premier League. They're going to go out there like with their tails up. I just think they're going to kick Leeds' ass. I honestly do. I think they're going to win like 4-0.
Yeah, I tend to agree that Liverpool will win this match pretty handily. I'm excited to see how Leeds and Bielsa get on throughout the course of the season. But yeah, I mean, the Bielsa is still finding his top gear.
Yeah, he's a great manager, but I mean, he doesn't have the horses, I don't think, I mean, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, sure. Like anyone, you know, it's the Premier League. It's not like some of the other leagues where it's much harder for, like, you know, it's not like, you know, trying to beat Bayern or something like that. You know, like they could happen, but I just think it's very unlikely. All right, so let's move on to, and then the defenders, well, you know, let's just move on. We talked about Liverpool. We'll talk about Liverpool like for like 20 minutes every podcast for like the next like 9 months. So I think we can move on here. Move on to Sunday, and it's Leicester visit West Brom, and West Brom probably deserves to have gotten a little more coverage on this podcast. I don't see them being a team that is going to be super relevant, but sometimes it is that very conversation around relevancy that and the low ownership that sort of makes them intriguing. And, you know, the one player I'm a little intrigued by is Grady. Is it Dianga? Diangana? I think that's Diangana, I think is how you say his name.
Okay, you're on your own on that one.
Butchered pronunciation. But he was fantastic last season for West Brom in the championship, and then got injured. And so missed a big, I think he had something like 5 goals and 6 assists before he got injured in December. And but just, you know, was really happy at West Brom, apparently. And
why wouldn't West Ham, Josh?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, they only helped him get promoted, you know? So West Brom, you know, considered a very talented young player. West Brom, to the surprise of many West Brom players, was sold on. Or, I mean, excuse me, to the surprise of many West Ham players, was sold on to West Brom. And now looks like it could be a really promising asset. I wish he came in at 5 million, at 5.5. It feels a little high to take a risk just out of the gate. But, you know, I'm not necessarily one who keeps watch lists. Maybe I should, but I think that he's one that I've definitely got my eye on moving forward, especially if Saint-Maximin doesn't work out. And they usually have a pretty decent run of fixtures to start out the season as well, West Brom. You know, as far as this match itself goes, though, I feel like they still have like a forward issue they still have to work out too. You know, I mean, do you see any reason why Leicester wouldn't win this match?
I don't. West Brom will probably be straight back down. They, you know, despite the signing you were just talking about, they haven't signed much or signed very well over the break, so they're going to struggle for goals. So it does make the Justin pick for Leicester kind of intriguing for game week one, but we talked about this in our Leicester previews. Just Leicester's run isn't amazing to start the season, and they are just a bit in a bit of an odd place right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not intrigued, and Jamie Vardy would be the asset to get, but he is just too expensive. When we're talking about having 212 million midfielders, and there's and just Werner. No room left, and Werner, and there's just no room left for a 10 million Jamie Vardy.
Yeah, I'm with you on Jamie Vardy. I just think he's too expensive. I actually was trying to find a way to fit him in last night, and it's just getting that 1.5 million from Jimenez to Vardy, and I just think that Jimenez could equal Vardy's returns, and so it didn't seem worth it to upend my team to do it. And then, you know, I think Justin is just a little bit at risk now because of this Castagna signing. He's joined from Atalanta, part of that really good Atalanta team that made it to, I think it was the Champions League quarterfinals, right? Mm-hmm, and PSG scored those two late goals. And but 5.5 million plays as a right back or a right midfielder. So I think that Justin is very much at risk. I don't know how that works out with Perea when he rejoins, but that's who knows when Pereira's coming back, right? I think that's still a ways off.
Yeah.
So then there's one other match on Sunday, Spurs Everton. Got a few questions here about Spurs. We have not talked about Spurs that much either, surprisingly. We talked about their defense a little bit. Interesting that neither of us have really, I mean, I've considered Sun a little bit, but let's get into some questions here. Espen Larsen says, since the league starts in September, why shouldn't Kane be in everyone's team?
Why? Well, we've talked about price points, and there is a problem with that. Price point at 10 and above. We were just talking about how hard it is to fit Jamie Vardy into the team, and talk about the accumulation of all of our knowledge. And, you know, Kane has had some amazing seasons, but the last two seasons have been on the decline for Kane FPL wise. So to me, the Spurs attack, and I would include Son and all of them in it, I want to see them do something before I decide where I want to invest, because not to be totally negative, to be positive, they have other players that could be really great FPL assets, from Son to Dele Alli. Lo Celso is a bit of a stretch, but maybe it isn't doesn't end up being Kane who you want from this team. So it's just a lot of money for me to splash on a player where there are other players for Spurs that might be or turn out to be better FPL players, you know?
Yeah, I also worry about how much, and that's actually the problem with Davis too, is, you know, how much are these players going to be involved in the Europa League in these qualifying matches? I mean, they do have to travel to Eastern Europe for a match. I think it's this, I guess it must be the, it's the Thursday after the season starts. They have to travel away for that. And so, you know, I don't know if they actually really play a full strength side in that at all, but like, it's still a little bit of a worry, right? Like, they still have to travel and you'd think that, I don't, you know, do they keep Son and Kane home for that one? It just, it feels like it's, even if they do, it's like the fact that we don't know what's going to happen there just adds this like layer of awkwardness, you know, and like, you know, if they don't win decisively enough on the road, they're going to have to play them in the next week. And Son is not a player who they typically try to put like a ton of tread on his tires. Yeah. So
you want to talk about the Europa League commitments. Spurs have 8 matches in 18 days at the start of the season. It's an insane fixture pileup.
Okay, let's move on to another Spurs question here, Brandon. Danny Bean says, does the Spurs, have you seen the Spurs documentary yet, Brandon? Have you watched any episodes of this?
No, I'm not a Prime subscriber here in the States, so I haven't had the opportunity to watch it.
Okay. I watched them last night. It's okay. I enjoyed parts of it. It made me sad to see Pochettino again and realize that, like, he made the Champions League final and then they had like a bad run to start the season and he got sacked. Like, I guess they maybe left on mutual terms or whatever, but like, what a weird thing. Like, who doesn't want Pochettino as their manager? It's like the players should go. Like, why don't sack him, you know? but that was just a weird situation.
It was weird, but that squad was falling apart. It makes it so much funnier that Jose Mourinho ended up being the one to replace Pochettino, because at the end of Pochettino's run there, it reminded me of when Chelsea was falling apart in that last stint that Jose had at the club, where it's just like no players wanted to play, no one wanted to be there, nothing was working, the manager had to go. And it just seemed like weird that the players just quit on Pochettino. That was my reading on it.
I know. And just like, is that on him or is that on the players? You know, so that's strange. Anyway, Danny Bean says, does the Spurs documentary make you want to put their players in your team? He says, because I had none, watched one episode and now have 3. I think we all know about that, Brandon. I mean, that's why you've got Mario Lemina in your team, right? It's like you want to have you fall in love with your own people, you know?
you fall in love with your own people, I guess. You see these players in these documentaries, and Danny says they're just like me.
Eric Dyer speaks Portuguese, though. I don't do that. I'm not that cool. That guy is so cool, Brandon. All right, one question here about Everton. We're going to talk a lot more about them in the future. We just didn't really have time to get into all their. They signed like 27 midfielders in the last week. It's kind of insane. To me, that whole team is like a kind of wait and see. But Law says, is DCL worth the extra million over Mitro? I'm being swayed by the argument that Everton are sort of at the midfield and are no longer on the beach. I don't know. DCL, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, DCL is a great striker. Everton's midfield evaporated in the middle of last season, and it was just a bad scene. You want to have some level of trust in a world-class manager like Ancelotti. If you're going to give Bielsa all this credit, are you not going to give Ancelotti the same degree of credit? So he's brought in some continental midfielders in James Rodriguez and Allen, and who's the one I'm
Decore, most likely.
Yeah, Decore, that's a really interesting mix of players that each brings a different thing to the table. And I think
don't forget Tom Davies.
Tom Davies pulling all the strings. So I could see there being a moment in the season where we're having to make difficult decisions between Richarlison and DCL. But it's sort of like, as I was saying, with be it Spurs or if you're not convinced, like somebody with Mitrovic, just give it a couple of weeks and see what they look like. And it's not like everyone's going to move heaven and earth after game week one to get all these Everton players in, unless they just absolutely batter Spurs. I think
Yeah.
I think it's just not going to be that kind of a game where a player like DCL is going to emerge as a must have. Maybe he gets a goal. So you're not going to be priced out of DCL by the time we get to game week two is my point.
I think that's a good point. I hadn't even thought about the price part of it, which I think does make, if anything, I think there might be some, I think there might be some adjustments that have to take place with the new team, and the prices could even go down, you know? And so I think like sometimes like saying like wait and see feels like very unbold, you know, and kind of uncourageous or something. But I just think in this case, like, it's just true. Like, you can't add, and Andrea Gomez missed a ton of matches last season as well. Right. So like,
yeah,
you basically in a situation where you have an entirely new midfield and like none of them have played together before. It could work out great from the start, but it seems unlikely. It usually doesn't work that way. And so why not just wait 3 or 4 weeks? And then if it works out, then you can start spending some transfers on them, you know, like you were saying. So I think it's a wait and see with that team. Moves us to Monday, Brandon. Mm-hmm. We've got two matches on Monday at the same time. It's kind of a shame. I wish they had spread those out a little bit, but because I'm excited about both of them. They're both really good matches and really interesting. You have Brighton-Chelsea. And Brighton have sort of, I think people are getting, they had a fun start and then they were kind of bad the middle, like 27 weeks. And then got a little, they got kind of fun at the end again. And then you have Chelsea who are just completely remade. And so I think it's going to be a really interesting match. A couple of questions here. Benny Blanco says, does the number of attacking options at Chelsea excite or concern you?
I think it's a great problem to have if you have too many attacking options for Chelsea. And the great thing is, you know, the team that I would correlate it to from a fantasy perspective would be Manchester City, like the same type of setup where you have a ton of interesting attacking FPL assets. And if you say that's true of Chelsea, if they put it all together, they're much cheaper than those Manchester City assets. So yeah, if it all works, these are quite affordable and they would allow it. Chelsea will allow you to even double up, whether it's with Werner and Havertz, Werner and Pulisic, or just two midfielders. So many different combinations that could end up working. I think it's cool.
And Pulisic is actually the one where I'm like, how does it even work? Like, do you play him as a number 10 or something? You know, it's like, it's really, it's going to be interesting to see, but I agree. It's exciting. And if anything, I feel like I can't remember ever going into a season where there were this many interesting players that I wanted to have in my squad. It would have been even crazier if Man United and Man City both played in game week one. You know, Red Dagger says about Havertz, we talked about him before. You know, he's awesome, fun, really fun player to watch in the Bundesliga. He says, you know, does Havertz start right from the beginning? He does seem like a steal at 8.5. I agree. I think that price is excellent. There are some actually issues with Chelsea. He may have to start right off the bat just to plug in for some injured players. Looks like Ziyech might be out the first the first match. But I don't know. 8.5 is a really tricky price point. I mean, you know,
you've got to really believe in the player at 8.5, totally. I think.
Yeah, I mean, Pulisic, you know, was a player who a lot of people had beginning game week one last season. I actually don't think he got his first start until game week four or something like that. He did have a, you know, a few weeks to get himself integrated into the team before he started getting starts. So, you know, I, even though Havertz signed for a ton of money, I don't know that he's in there right off the bat. And even if he does start, is he, you know, is he banging in 13 point hauls like immediately? Like,
yeah,
who knows? You know, just too much of a risk. Then Sheffield United Wolves, just an interesting game. I think Sheffield United, I mean, the question there is just like, are they for real, you know, or are they, like, do they just, have they not done enough up front basically to be, an interesting team this season?
Yeah. I'm a little worried about Sheffield United going into the season. And, I just don't think you can expect what we saw last season. Though that said, it kind of also flips the other way of how excited are you to own Wolves assets going into game weeks 1 and 2 with Sheffield United followed by Manchester City?
You know, I think it's really tricky. I mean, in some ways, having someone like Jimenez for Man City, I think is fine because he honestly has a pretty strong track record. I think he had 3 goals and 1 assist in their 2 matches last season against Man City. The Man City attacking style does seem to really help Wolves on the Counter. I guess the question is whether he, I think he, you know, he got COVID, right?
Yeah, so he's being quarantined right now.
He's quarantined. So will he be ready, you know, to start maybe by game week two? I mean, assuming he's healthy and okay. I don't think the Sheffield United fixture away is quite as bad as the 4 fixture difficulty rating for it would make you believe. Yeah, I think that I really have a lot of faith in the Wolves defense. Mostly because they kept Cody, Bully, and Sace. And those three have just been really strong. Yeah, they're really solid. And so I just feel good about, as long as they're back there, I feel like they're not gonna make a ton of mistakes, even though they are obviously replacing Matt Doherty and then Johnny's injured until like January. So it'd be a little bit of a change. I guess the worry here would be if Jimenez moves, and I guess they just signed that 18-year-old. I can't think of his name right now. I forgot it, but the new Wolves signing. What an awesome looking dude he is.
He's so young though.
Silva. Yeah,
he's not played that much football, so I can't imagine they've signed him to slot in as their starting number 9.
Totally. No, I don't think so either. And then just quickly, the teams that aren't playing. Mike DiPietro, just big picture question. How many players that fixtures of game week 1 are safe to have in your squad? I'm going with 1. You're going with 1 as well. Would you consider more than 1?
I wouldn't, because I still go back to what I've been saying throughout the preseason is, City don't have some amazing start to the season. They've got some tricky fixtures, and I think they warrant just a slow working of them into your squad. And we're helped by what you were saying, Josh, about how there are just so many other players that we want to have that could be great assets to start the season. See, I feel like we can kind of get away with it. Manchester United having the better fixture run is a little trickier, but we're both starting with 1 Manchester United player in game week 1, and I feel pretty good about that. If you're going to have players from City and United, they're going to be of the premium variety. And having 2 premium players on your bench at game week 1, I'd feel bad about that. That does not sound fun to me.
Feels like you're throwing away game week 1 just to set yourself up long term. Then one final question. Mick says, Man United assets, how are we supposed to rank Bruno, Rashford, Martial, and Greenwood? To me, this is basically a... this is just like I was talking about before. There are just too many good players this season, and you have to make some cuts somewhere. And I think that I just may not have Bruno Fernandes as much as I admire him as a player. I just don't know. I don't know how I can have Bruno Fernandes, Kevin De Bruyne, and Mo Salah, and Timo Werner, and somehow have any other players, in my squad.
Well, what you said earlier in the show, Josh, was to look at your game week 1 team and say, okay, I'm going to set and forget these cheap players. And the game will start when I start moving around all of my premium assets. So it's not that you have to rank Bruno, Rash, Martial, and Greenwood. Maybe you're going to have all of them throughout the course of the season because they'll have their spurts of form. So just be ready to move quickly, to be active, to not be passive.
All right, Brad, let's take one last final short break, and then we'll get back with our lightning round.
Sundays are back, guys. They're back in the NFL with NFLSundayTicket.tv. You can stream every live out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices, plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. Never miss your favorite teams and favorite players. No matter where you live, NFLSundayTicket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use promo code BLUEWIRE.
Brandon, you and I have counted on restaurants. Now they are counting on us. I very strongly believe in this, Brandon. As much as I love to eat out, I also have to do it to support these restaurants. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. I have done this with DoorDash several times personally, Brandon, and it's worked out beautifully every time. Right now, our listeners, the IWSGD listeners, can get $5 off and zero delivery fees in their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE. That's BLUEWIRE with no space. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees in your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code BLUEWIRE. Don't forget, BLUEWIRE for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. All right, Brad, we're back. Lightning round. For anyone who is new to the lightning round, every question gets an answer 30 seconds or less. We never, ever, ever break that rule. We never will.
No exceptions.
No exceptions. Exactly. All right. Here we go. Jack says, how are you navigating the transfer window closing well after the first matches start?
I mean, is it really that different than any other transfer window? The transfer window usually closes at the end of September when the season starts in August. Do I have that right?
Yeah. Last year was a little different, but usually it's like August 31st or whatever is the last day.
I mean, you can only, it's like we like to say, you can only play the game week in front of you. You can only play the FPL assets that are at your disposal. Jack, I wouldn't lose any sleep over this. And if new players come in after the season starts, it's like we were saying with a lot of these new players who will still need to be bedded into their clubs. It's just going to take time. And if you see after game week two, some new player comes into a club that you're interested in, it's still going to take a couple of game weeks before we really kind of understand if they're even going to get a start. So I don't feel like there's any big rush here.
No, the only thing that it makes me think about is waiting to use my wild card. And I thought about being really aggressive, going all in at game week one and then wild carding in game week two. And this makes me less inclined to do that because I feel like if something like Jadon Sancho signs or, you know, Messi for a while was the one that was at risk, you know. So I just think that I want to have the door open in case some big changes happen in the transfer window.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I mean, even some players who might leave, right? Like you know, Matt Ritchie, we talked about him a while ago. It sounds like he actually might be like a make weight in a deal. Like if Ryan Fraser and Callum Wilson both sign for Bournemouth, Ritchie may actually go that way. So kind of interesting.
God, no.
Eric Freeman says, what players? It's two times in one podcast, Brandon. He says, what players are you most afraid of not owning for game week one that you can't or won't put into your team?
That I can't or won't. I guess Mane. So we've talked about Mane's preseason being pretty good, and you do have to make this decision of where does that choice get made? And we chose Salah. So yeah. Mane could just turn around and do a favor to all those managers who decided to zig instead of zag with Salah.
Yeah, I think Harry Kane is also up there. I'm not as afraid because his ownership isn't going to be crazy high. True of Mane, I guess, a little bit too. But Harry Kane's the one where I'm like, part of me is like, should I just go Kane over Werner? You know, there's a part of me that feels like that might actually be the best move. Of course, he's also a million more expensive, which is why I haven't done it so far. If they were the same price, I would really strongly consider Kane, though, over Werner. Mikey says, are pre-planned transfers a good or bad idea?
Well, they're good. I mean, I think the idea is like pre-planning isn't that it's good or bad. It's how beholden are you? So you have to be open to the fact that your plans might have to change at a moment's notice. So you've planned 2 weeks in advance. There's a lot of stuff that could happen in 1 week that ought to change what that 2 week plan is, but you don't want to be so stubborn that you won't change your plan. Does that make sense? Like it's good to plan, but don't be too strict about how according to plan you go.
Yeah. I think that's true. Maybe the way the spin I would put on it is just like I think we actually talked about this a little bit earlier in the pod. It's been a long podcast, Brandon. But there are people, I've seen people post like, here's like my first six transfers or something. And I'm like, If you've never played, that's a strategy. If you've played before, that is not a strategy because, like, it's like, you know, it's like the Mike Tyson thing. Like everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth. You know, it's like we know, like when we do our, by the time we do next week's podcast, we're going to be through these matches, it's going to be chaos. Like three players are going to get injured. Seven are going to have COVID. You know, it's going to be like a disaster area, and all of our beautiful planning is going to go down the drain. And so I think like planning like two transfers ahead, two game weeks, I think that seems fine. Anything more than two, I just feel like you're really not being realistic, you know, as far as the chaos that's going to visit your team, or just bad returns.
I have been in situations though where I have made a rash transfer. I felt like I wanted to get a player in like 2 or 3 weeks, and I make a rash transfer in the meantime. That means I actually can't make that move 3 weeks down the line. So that's where planning actually has helped me, is just be aware of what you're doing in the short term and how that could impact your long-term plans.
All right. Question here from Boston Profits. Good question. Although I think we've kind of answered it with our own teams. It says, who is the best purchase at the lowest price for each position? So, you know, the cheapest goalkeeper, defender, midfielder, and forward. So I think for keeper, we both got Nyland.
Mm-hmm. There's a rumor that Button might be going to, is it West Brom, to give a little competition to Johnstone?
Oh, interesting.
So everyone's a little worried about what's going on with Button, especially if you've gone for Matt Ryan plus Button and you're like, okay, no matter what happens at Brighton, I have a keeper there. No problem.
Yeah. I don't even see Button list anymore for Brighton. Has that already happened?
I don't know.
Oh yeah, he's there. Yeah, so I guess that's already gone through.
Oh, it's already gone through. Okay, yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so yeah, maybe Button Johnstone. Very interesting. Okay, so maybe could we end up having Nyland and Button? We have 2-4 million keepers at least for a while. That'd be
awesome.
Interesting.
I'm not convinced that Nyland is going to start though. It's not that I'm not convinced. It's just not for certain. I mean, Nyland was not a great keeper for Villa when he had to play for them last season. Steer's ready to come in as well. Better. So it's a coin toss right now.
Steer's bad. Nyland's bad.
They're all bad.
Wasn't that great when he played? All right. Then the I think, you know, defender, I think there's a couple, you know, who knows, right? I mean, I said Tyreek Mitchell. You have
Barry Douglas.
Yeah, Barry Douglas. You know, there for a while there, it looked like Ferguson, but he got injured. So, I don't know. There's usually one or two. And like you said, they usually emerge once the season starts. So I think, like Braithwaite, I'm seeing has some ownership. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Jared Braithwaite, is he going to start? I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Midfield, the mids and forwards is a just disaster zone. Just like put up the red caution tape. Don't go there.
So true. And, you know, I actually feel like I'm forced to play three forwards because there are no cheap third, like, you know, it's like, I mean, it's all well and good to play like a 4-4-2 or a, you know, 3-5-2 or whatever is a formation, but but if there's no one that you can get at 4.5 million, like you might need that, like, you know, especially, you know, like we just don't know what's going to happen this season. Like you want to be able to at least get like 2 or 3 points, you know, off the bench. That's my thinking anyways. I mean, you know, I don't know, so it just feels like I mean Davis, maybe, I guess he might be the pick, right? Is Keenan Davis going to get some minutes? He did in the summer. I don't know.
Who knows, Josh? Let's our time. The 30 seconds is up.
All right, fair enough. All right, two more questions. Evan says, because of potential COVID cases. Actually, these are the same question, so we can just say them back to back. Because of potential COVID cases, should we have two playing goalkeepers just in case? And then SWAT says, is the case of Suchek isolating because of COVID, potentially missing game week one, which is a real bummer. That we should know more this week about that. He was isolated and he's passed negative on his test. If Suchek comes back, I actually think that could create some interesting dilemmas.
He's in that 5.5 bracket, isn't he?
He's only five, actually.
He's only five. Okay. Even better.
Yeah. The COVID thing, I mean, I suppose it actually is. It is changing my strategy a little bit. I think in a normal season, I would be okay having one or even two players who just didn't play at all. And because of COVID, I feel like I'm a little more cautious about having some bench depth.
Yeah, I think it's a good policy because it is the it could happen at any moment sort of a thing.
Right.
My initial reaction, though, particularly for Evan's question of should you have two playing goalkeepers because of what could happen with COVID, and my initial reaction is I just don't know if I can play that way, just like playing out of fear of what might happen. Maybe you just have to address it when it comes up and take it from there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you don't want to build a whole strategy around what may or may not happen. It's going to hurt everyone fairly equally. And again, those bench players don't pick up that many points for you anyway. So I don't think it's like worth having a bunch of really good players on your bench.
Absolutely not the end of the world if 1 week you end up with not a playing goalkeeper. Like, how many times have you had a playing goalkeeper, Josh, that got 0 points, that actually got -2 points? So you'll survive.
Yep. Happened with Ben Foster, I think, a few times this summer. All right. So that's the end of the lightning round. A final bonus section here. A little more make fantasy fun. Again, advice, Brandon, I cannot stress this enough. It's what we're going to really try to focus on this year. It's like if I say it enough out loud, I'm going to like speak truth to power or something, Brandon. I'm going to like, you know, convince myself that this is the way I'm going to play this year. So a couple pieces of advice, two from listeners and then one from each of us. Late riser 12, Pernell Seth, says, make decisions based on what you see on the pitch and not on a data site. I like that. I would add social media to that as well.
Yes, Twitter is not a data site for those out there who think it is. The next one comes
People dump data on there, but usually it's without a lot of context.
Yeah, that's true. All right, the next one comes from that Joe guy. Pick one fun player that you like, mid-price, easy to swap out, but just someone that you enjoy watching. Doubles the joy if they haul. And I'm thinking of like it is right in that 5 to 6 million price bracket where you can A, get away with a fun pick of your choice, and B, that's the price point where they actually do have potential to return. I like that idea, Joe.
And then one bonus piece from each of us. I'll go first here. For me, it's just play, make choices that you want to make and don't. This feels like a very like obvious thing to say, but I find myself often talked out of decisions based on like social media conversations that are taking place. And it sort of gets in my head a little bit. And it almost never works out in my favor. I feel like it does not help me to listen to what people are telling me to do. Or like if I post my team a couple of days before the deadline and everyone's like, you can't have them or whatever, like I'll like trust some stranger over my own impression sometimes. And it's like, it's not fun and it doesn't work usually anyway.
Yeah. My piece of advice this week, it's like you live in New York or you live in some part of the world and you're, parents come to visit you. And when they come to visit, you end up doing all the touristy things that you wouldn't do otherwise. And suddenly you're having fun and you're seeing the place where you live in a different way. And I had this when my parents would come visit me in New York early on when I had first moved here. And you go to the Empire State Building, and you're like, wow, this is actually pretty cool. I live in a pretty cool place. So a couple weeks ago, an old friend of mine from childhood who I actually grew up playing soccer with reached out to me and said, hey, I'm interested in playing FPL this season. And it has been a lot of fun the last couple of weeks, just texting him back and forth like, oh, this is the strategies that I like to use. What are you thinking for your team? And it's given me a new appreciation of where I live in FPL, introducing it to somebody new. So I think that's a good piece of advice to help make it fun is try to introduce FPL to somebody new in your life.
That's a good, I like that. I wonder if I could actually do that myself. If there's enough time, 1 week left to go. Maybe I try to get my brother back in. Hey, my brother used to play fantasy. Yeah.
What about your 3-year-old?
Yeah. You know, honestly, that might be more true this year. Maybe I can get my wife. Oh, that'd be interesting. But, you know, one thing, a lot of people aren't in work leagues anymore. The work league is not as big of a thing this year because so many people are working from home, because of the, pandemic-induced work-from-home policies. So maybe this is the right time to just try to convince a friend to do it. And, like, often there's you might think, oh, like I'm going to be taking it so seriously and he's going to be terrible. And what's the fun in that? But I don't know, beginner's fantasy luck is a real thing. It and sure we've is. Seen yeah. it. And yeah. every time we've added somebody new to our personal mini league, it, like they can very invariably win the league that year.
Which is a good reminder of sometimes the better way to play FPL is without that bias and without the the herd that you can get sucked into when you're an FPL regular.
I think that's, I think that's very true. In fact, that season was, I remember I was thinking of it was my brother and his friend. They had they co-managed a team in our league. And I remember they went all in early on Luis Suarez. And it was the SAS year where it was Suarez, Aguero, Sturridge. Sturridge was good. They had that one year where he was amazing. And they went all in on Suarez and Sturridge up front when nobody else was doing it. And it was just like they didn't know how you were supposed to play, right? Yeah, it was like they spent $35 million in their forward line. That worked out incredibly. So that's your podcast. Good luck to everybody this weekend. I'm really, really excited to have the game back. I have to admit, I am super excited that it kicks off on Saturday again, because these Fridays deprive me one of the great joys, which is the sleepless Friday night before the game week kicks off. And I love it's like Christmas morning for me. Like, I know how lame that sounds, but I just love it so much. I love that first Saturday of the Premier League.
Yeah, the rise and shine on the East Coast and the States for the 7:30 kickoff. It really is wake up and see what presents Santa brought you. And we'll see if Aubameyang delivers a new bicycle for you this week, Josh.
St. Maximum too, Brandon, of course, are my boy. All right, so if you want to support the podcast, I want to say thank you. You can either go to iTunes and give us a review, which would be awesome, or give us five-star rating, or do the same on Spotify. I think, can you rate podcasts on Spotify? I'm actually not sure.
I don't think so, but just subscribe. It's good practice to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode.
Yeah, wherever you listen. And you can become a supporter on our Patreon, say thanks, get access to our weekly prize league, bonus podcast, the mini league mate, tons of other stuff that we'll talk about throughout the season. So if you missed it, easy to find, just go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. And Brandon, do you want to say a quick thank you to our patrons, please?
Oh, I love our producer patrons, and they are Trevor Ingerson, Mike DiPietro, Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Martin Savage, Brian T, Da Big Gaffer, Bobas Kuhn, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, the secret forgotten producer, James Holland, Jazz Binning, Dave Wagner Lodahl, Nick Wright, Jim Payne, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Travis West, Victor Forberg Skoging, Paul Herzig, Kyer, Christine Lalang, Andy Portlock, Toothless Gibbon, Lindsay Rostel, Anton Markov, FPLmerch.com, Kerry Swanson, Brandon B., Paul Scanlon, Kieran Screeton, James Hurd, Francis Mann, Chris Carter, Bluno Stew, Matt Marks, Mikey Uong, Bruce Kerr, Alper Paxoy, and Nicholas Vernadakis. Thanks to you all. And of course, follow us on social media, wherever you find social media. Email us, hailcheaters@gmail.com. All this information, including the Always Cheating shop, is at alwayscheating.com.
Beautiful. All right, Brandon, good luck this weekend. I will see you next week.
Good luck to you. Poku forever. All right, gang, one last word before we get out of here. The wait is finally over and football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.